You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As per usual, I am your host, Handy. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening. Thanks for tuning in to another fantastic edition of the Eagle Sports Zone, coming to you live from your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. And here on the Eagle Sports Zone, if it is your first time tuning into the Eagle Sports Zone, on the Eagle Sports Zone, we like to discuss things that happen behind the scenes, things that make what we love to see on the sports field, happen. You know, whether it's sports business, sports marketing, sports psychology, whether it's development issues, whether it's infrastructure issues. These are the things we like to dive into on the Eagle Sports Zone. So thanks for tuning in. And today on the Eagle Sports Zone, we will be discussing an issue that is complex in a certain extent, but it's a issue. It's a conversation about the amount of conferences that take place in our nation, not only our nation, but the continent at large. You know, there's a lot of sports conferences that take place, a lot of panel discussions that have been taking place. And so today on the Eagle Sports Zone, we're going to discuss, can these things, these events, these platforms, can they really drive change? Can they really be the change that we seek when it comes to sports growth, sports development, sports professionalization? You know, all these fancy words that we like to use. Are sports conferences, are panel discussions really, really the answer? And as always, the number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. If you'd like to call in with any questions, comments, concerns, anything you'd like to say in the sporting regard, whether it is what we're talking about, or you have another topic you'd like to bring up, we accommodate you all. And if you are following us on our social media pages right now, we are live on Facebook, we are live on X, we are live on YouTube. So if you have any questions there, feel free to send them in there. If I have time, I will get to them. So first, what we're going to be discussing on the Eagle Sports Zone, let's get to some local sports news first. And when it comes to local sports news, there's no better place to start than swimming. We'll get to football in a second. Some continental football has been happening, but we will get to football in just a moment. So let's start with swimming. Okay. Our young swimmers, our fantastic swimmers were over in Gaborone, that is Botswana, for the Africa Aquatics Zone 4 Championships. That was from the 2nd to the 5th of September, hosted in Botswana, as I just said. And the team captains for our swimmers in this competition were Luke Bierkes and Molina Smalley. They finished at the top of the overall standings for the fourth year in a row at this competition with 2,610 points. That was Team Namibia ahead of Botswana, who accumulated 2,017 points. And South Africa finished in third on 2,007 points. And the titles of Victor and Victrix Ludorum for the age bracket of 17 and older went to Namibia's Oliver Durand, as well as Namibia's Jessica Humphrey. So a round of applause. Round of applause for those two young swimmers who, it seems that every time they go to a swimming competition, they represent the nation well. And the best individual performance in the female category went to none other than Jessica Humphrey in the 100 meter backstroke, collecting 732 Athena points in a time of 1 minute and 3 seconds. So congratulations to Jessica. Round of applause to Jessica for a fantastic swim. And the best individual performance in the male category went to none other than Luke Bierkes for his performance in the 50 meter freestyle, collecting 778 FINA points in a time of 22.73 seconds. The netball finals are underway, as well as I currently understand, in Walvis Bay. So as soon as we get results from that, I will be able to give you further information on who won. The netball title. And as a matter of fact, my sources have come through for me. So I can report now that the Namibia Correctional Services have claimed their fifth MTC Netball Namibia Premier League title and their fourth in succession. So NCS, they are dominating the netball circuit, it seems. So a big congratulations to the Namibia Correctional Service for collecting their fifth league title. That was after they beat UNAM Orongo 42-36 in Sunday's final. This was at the Walvis Bay Gymnasium netball courts. And on the individual side of things, in the netball season, in the local netball season, the 2026 awards are as follows. The team manager of the season went to Nel Isadore, that is of Tigers Netball Club. The coach of the season went to UNAM Orongo's netball, that is Tab Sakupaula, Tab Sakupaula winning the coach of the season. The umpire of the season went to Ihab Ambrosius. With the players' choice player of the season going to Grace Matiai. Let's give these winners a round of applause as we continue to go through the rest of the winners. The best defender of the season went to Hunga Melita. The best midcourt of the season went to Monica Gomez. And the best shooter of the season went to Ndahapele Lea. And the overall, the big prize of the season, the overall player of the season went to Murangi Sunshine. That is of NCS, of course. So NCS picked up several awards. The best midcourt player of the season, Monica Gomez, is also from NCS. So another season of the Netball Premier League has come to an end. Congratulations to all players and parties involved in that one. And of course, kudos to MTC for once again sponsoring the league and sponsoring, you know, the individual prizes. I see here the Player of the Season award got a $7,000 prize. The Defender of the Season award got a $5,000 prize. Team Manager of the Season got a $5,000 prize. Defender of the Season got a $5,000 prize. So, you know, we're on the way in terms of netball. Netball, always a fun season for the ladies that compete in the competition. And, of course, the national team, as we know, does well internationally as well. Now, moving on to local football. The local football season is yet to begin, but we did have two local teams competing on the continental level, which is always a wonderful thing to see, of course. And we'll start with UNAM. UNAM FC, who suffered a we'll start with UNAM FC, who suffered a 2-0 defeat to Kabuskop, that is from Angola, our neighbors in the north, suffered a 2-0 defeat in their debut CAF Confederations Cup campaign. This is a two-legged tie, so UNAM still has time to redeem themselves in this competition. We had another team playing in this CAF in on the continental level. This is now in the CAF Champions League preliminary round, where African Stars faced off against RS Manga Sport in the first leg of the CAF Champions League preliminary round that was taking place in Gabon. So both teams that are representing the nation on the continental level weren't able to come up with a win in their respective matches. But once again, these are two-legged ties. So both teams only down two goals. All it takes for them is to score two goals and then things are tied up again. So our boys that are competing on the continental stage still have opportunities to redeem themselves. And speaking of African stars, some positive news to share. As I said, we like to discuss sports business, things that happen behind the scenes in sports, and some good news for African stars who are Namibia's reigning Premier League champions, reigning football Premier League champions. They signed a $13 million sponsorship agreement with SunBet Namibia for the next 3 years. That works out to around $4.3 million going towards African stars, and through their partnership with SunBet Namibia. So good things to see in that front. And I must applaud African stars because they are one of the teams that that are really leaning on the fact that are really leaning on their digital platforms. You know, if you scroll through African Stars' social media pages, they're really doing well in terms of graphics, in terms of keeping the nation and their supporters, of course, up to date on everything that is happening with Stalile. So I hope that the other teams follow suit, and it's not a mistake. It's definitely not a mistake that they were able to secure such a sponsorship. And in a few moments, we'll discuss. These are part of the things that get discussed at the conferences that I mentioned. So once we get through our sporting news, we will dissect this further. And so moving along to cricket now, where the FNB Tri-Series, the inaugural FNB Tri-Series, came to a conclusion. That was yesterday at the FNB Namibia Cricket Ground in Windhoek. The FNB Tri-Series consisted of Namibia, of course, host Zimbabwe, and the Proteas, that is South Africa. And all three of these nations, coincidentally, or perhaps not coincidentally, are also going to be the three nations that will co-host the World Cup next year. So for all the cricket lovers out there, there will be more international cricket coming your way. That is with the World Cup, first time ever in Namibia. We'll be co-hosting it with our SADC brothers and sisters, that is South Africa and Zimbabwe. But the Proteas won it. South Africa won it. They won the first ever FNB T20 Tri-Series, dominating the final against Zimbabwe by 48 runs. Now, Namibia didn't fare the greatest in this competition. We beat the Proteas in the opening match, and then we fell to Zimbabwe and the Proteas once more, which is why the final consisted of the Proteas and the Chevrons of Zimbabwe. But nevertheless, another fantastic learning experience for Cricket Namibia, for our boys. We had a few young debutants. I'm thinking of young Max, who made his international debut, bowled well. So only onwards and upwards for the cricket team, the national cricket team, that is. And that is all in terms of local sporting news that we really have for you today. Now, staying on the continent, continental sporting news. The greatest rivalry series has been taking place over in South Africa. That is a series between fierce international rugby rivals, that is South Africa and New Zealand. The first of four matches took place on the 22nd of August, with New Zealand taking that one 33-16. The second match, that was on the 29th of August, South Africa got revenge, taking that one 33-26. And then yesterday, sort of the tiebreaker between the two sides, so the Springboks take that one at 29-24. Was quite the nail biter. And then the final match of the series will take place on the 12th of September between South Africa and New Zealand. So let's see if New Zealand can even the series up to 2-2, or if South Africa can run away with it and get their third consecutive win against the All Blacks. South Africa, we all know, is a powerhouse when it comes to rugby. The results speak for themselves. The continuous victories speak for themselves. So we don't have to, we don't have to dive too deep into that one. But the series has sparked a lot of conversation, right, in terms of the branding of the two teams. You know, the All Blacks have leaned in heavily on the on the community work. They leaned in heavily on showing them going into the various South African communities, connecting with the people of South Africa. As we know, there's a big contingent of South Africans that that choose to support the All Blacks over their own team, that is the Springboks, because of things that happened in the past, because of things that happened during apartheid. You know, when black players weren't allowed to play for the Springboks, they didn't want black people supporting the Springboks, essentially. So a lot of people still hold that that resentment, that hurt. They still carry that in 2026, and as a result, there's a surprisingly big community of All Blacks fans in South Africa, South Africans that support the All Blacks as sort of a statement, a sort of a protest statement to the Springboks. And a lot of people still feel that today, that the team doesn't represent the country. And as the All Blacks were releasing a lot of the content, a lot of the engagements with the community, you know, a lot of people said, see, this is exactly what we're talking about. So this separation led me down a journey where I discovered a gentleman who runs a creative sports agency in South Africa called 22 Hours, right? And this guy produced some very interesting content, and we're going to listen to some of it now. We're going to listen to some of it now, and as I said, his name, or the agency, is called 22 Hours, and in this excerpt that we're going to listen to, he was talking about rebranding South African football. So we're going to take a listen to this, and then we're going to bring it back home, how this can apply to Namibia. So let's take a listen to what he had to say.
South Africa will become the first African nation to win the FIFA World Cup. Or at least, that is what Sandile Zungu should say if he wins the SAFA presidency next week. My name is Volokanga, and I'm the managing director of a specialist sports creative agency based here in South Africa called 22 Hours. And this is Characters and Campaigns. Zoran Mamdani became mayor of New York City by giving people big, simple promises around things they could understand. Housing, buses, childcare, affordability, the daily things that shape people's lives. Now, whether you agree with these politics or not is not the point. The point is the method. He gave people a mission they could repeat. Then he kept coming back with progress. What has moved? What is delayed? What is still being fought for? What is next? Because people don't only believe because you make a promise. They believe because you keep showing them progress. The dream gets people listening. The proof keeps them believing. And that brings me back to Sandile Zungu. If Zungu wins the SAFA election, he is not just taking over a football association. He is basically becoming the mayor of a small political city. SAFA has regions, committees, sponsors, government, CAF, FIFA, the PSL, Bafana, Banyana, media, fans, old relationships, broken trust, and people who have heard every football promise before. So yes, he would have to navigate the internal politics, but he would also have to make the public believe again. And that is why the first statement matters. He shouldn't come out and say, we're going to fix football. I mean, we know that football needs fixing. But fixing football is not a story. It's administration. The story is South Africa will become the first African nation to win the FIFA World Cup. I know that sounds ridiculous, which is good because big missions are supposed to sound slightly ridiculous at the beginning. And as ridiculous as it sounds, this one actually works for three key reasons. Number one, it is simple. Everyone understands it immediately. You say it once and the whole country knows what the dream is. Number two, it creates continental attention. If South Africa declares this publicly, Nigeria has an opinion. Morocco has an opinion. Egypt, Senegal, Ghana, Ivory Coast, amongst others, all have an opinion, which is what you want. Because now the mission is no longer just a South African football story. It becomes part of a continental race. And if the world starts asking when instead of if Africa can finally win the World Cup, you have created anticipation. And that is where commercial opportunity lives. Because now every AFCON, every World Cup qualifier, Bafana camp, academy, PSL season, young player, coaching appointment, and sponsorship becomes part of one bigger narrative. Finally, it's believable enough to follow. Not because South Africa is suddenly favorites to win the World Cup tomorrow. We're not. But we are not starting from zero. We've hosted a FIFA World Cup. We have shown what we can do globally in rugby and cricket. We have produced world-class footballers. We have football culture. We have talent everywhere. We have Indeski. So you're asking people to believe in progress, not fantasy. The mission gives people the dream. The proof makes the dream feel real. If the relationship between SAFA and the PSL improves, that is proof. If governance improves, that is proof. If sponsors start trusting football again, that is proof. If academies, coaching, women's football, content, and the league product improve, that's more proof. Suddenly, every small win answers one question. Are we moving closer? And the timing matters. Because African football is traveling further than it ever has. AFCON is becoming a bigger global product. Streaming means people no longer have to live here to follow what happens. But there's another piece. South African football itself could be entering a leadership transition. If Sandile Zungu wins at SAFA, that is one new door. If PSL leadership changes hands in the coming years to someone with the profile of, say, Jessica Mutaung, that is another door. If Patrice Motsepe ever chose to run for FIFA president, he already sits close enough to the center of world football for that idea to carry weight. That matters. Because if SAFA, the PSL, CAF, and the global game start pulling in the same direction, then this World Cup mission stops feeling like a slogan, it starts feeling like a plan. That is why this election matters. Because Sandile Zungu stands in line to inherit more than an office. He could inherit a moment. And if he uses that moment properly, his job is not just to run SAFA. His job is to give South African football a mission, a scoreboard, and enough proof for people to believe we are moving closer. Because if South Africa ever becomes the first African nation to win the FIFA World Cup, it will not only be the greatest football achievement in our history, it could become the greatest sports story ever told.
Okay, that was 22 hours giving you some insight into the importance of storytelling, which is something that's definitely missing in our sporting landscape. You know, there's a lot that we don't know about our sporting, not even just our sporting heroes, our sporting participants, you know. That's why we have platforms like the Eagle Sports Zone, like your various sports talk shows around the country, that whose job now it is actually to tell these stories, to create these narratives for the people at home to have something to attach themselves to, you know. The reason some of you I know right now are watching Chelsea versus Arsenal, which if those of you that aren't watching, the score in that fixture right now as we speak, it is halftime, it is 1-1, Kai Havertz and Morgan Rodgers on the score sheet in the London Derby. So the reason I bring that up is to say, the reason that we're so attached to some of these things that aren't anywhere close to our homes is because of what, you know, the media has shown us. We've digested certain stories. We've become invested in these figures, in these athletes through the media. And so it is the job of us as the local media to do that for our local athletes also. But on the other hand, there needs to be willingness from the other side as well. But that's a whole nother story for another day. We need to stay focused on our topic today, which is about conferences. Can we conference our way to sporting success? But before we get to that, there's another story from down south, that is South Africa, that I want to share with you, and that is about, because we were just talking about cricket, that is about the T20, the SA20 cricket tournament that happens in South Africa. Okay, so there was a report that came out earlier in the week that said that this league, this tournament, contributes 6.5 billion rand. I repeat, 6.5 billion rand to the South African economy. So I'll skim through the report for you to give you some insights and to understand why they're saying this, right? And don't forget, the number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. I'll keep you up to date on everything happening in the sporting world. Right now, it is 1-1 between Arsenal and Chelsea. But as I said, the Betway SA20 is a is a T20, a franchise cricket tournament that has been happening in South Africa since 2023. And when it was created with big money, like backed by big money. Why was it backed by big money? Because it was obvious that they could generate a lot of money. And as we're seeing here, they're generating 6.5 billion for the economy, right? For the South African economy. And it only consists of six teams from all around the country. And they're saying that the most successful season to date was the one that took place this year in early 2026. They're saying that stadium attendance rose by 13% compared to last year, with 22 of the season's 34 matches completely sold out. The Sunrisers Eastern Cape emerged as the victors of the tournament, securing their third SA20 title after defeating Pretoria Capitals in the final match. So, interesting thing about this league is that the league's commissioner, basically the person, the boss of the league, is former Proteas captain Graham Smith. And he appeared on 702, that's a radio station over in South Africa, to discuss the economic impact, right? And this is what he had to say. He said that, and I quote, "This year we brought 6.5 billion to the GDP and created over 9,500 jobs," he said. And then he went on to say, "What I'm always trying to get through to the people is that the scale of the event that we've been able to build. It's almost like we're bringing a version of a world event to South Africa every single year. And for me, that's exciting." He said that the tournament had created opportunities for people operating inside the cricket stadium, such as food and beverage vendors. And he added that many of the vendors had been unable to sell their products due to a lack of high-profile cricketing events in the years prior to the start of this competition. And so before I continue, we have a caller on the line. Eagle FM, good evening.
Oh, good evening. Is it Eki or Eki? What's your name?
Hende.
Hende. Yes. That name is very difficult for me to remember. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing this evening?
No, we thank God. We are just enjoying soccer here.
Yeah, I see it's 1-1 in that fixture now.
Yes, it's 1-1. We were also looking at Everton. Is it Everton and Manchester United?
Yeah, 2-2.
I'm very happy that the Everton just called that very hot shot.
Heartbreaking.
And heartbreaking as well, almost. So this is how game is. And this is how we also need. And I was also listening to our own people.
Mm-hmm.
So KK there, and Chura Chure. I don't know what is happening in Laos by now. So what has happened?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are also making progress. So the only thing is that I don't know now the directive that was given by the president.
Yeah.
The mandate to the governor, regional governors, to ensure that sport is almost equal or second to agriculture.
Yeah, we'll go in a few moments. I'm going to run through the manifesto implementation plan and NDP 6 to tell you guys again what it says about sport. But yeah, you're right. It's the second priority in the manifesto implementation plan after agriculture.
Oh, don't say.
Yeah.
That is now SWAPO manifesto.
Yeah, the manifesto implementation plan.
That's great.
It's number
That's
two.
That's great. It become a national agenda.
Yes.
And we all need to promote, and I will listen, and then I will come in. But when you were talking, when listening to South Africa, that your colleague whom you were interviewing,
mm-hmm.
you could see that, yes, South Africa is making progress. They have done a great job, and they are still holding big events.
Yeah.
G20 just took place, and most of these big events taking place there. Despite the fact that, yes, there are some kind of issues, and now at least the governance structure is working seriously
mm-hmm.
to ensure that, yes, those things will not be happening. I was even hearing that when there's matches like that, people just force their way in and the chaos begins and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So for them, they were lucky because at least the World Cup took place there. It means that they could also develop a lot of sports field.
Yeah.
Even some of them, they were able to dismantle them to create space again for social economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope Namibia, and especially when they are working very hard with Botswana, I think very soon we will have some kind of games here. And the only problem is that the accommodation. When you look at periphery areas, you discover that not so much accommodation establishment that are taking place.
Mm.
So I think we are going to make progress. So let me reassess the implementation action plan.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Good.
So yes, as I said, we're gonna run through the Swapo Party manifesto implementation plan and discuss what they say about sport, and you see how it's gonna tie into our topic for the day in just a few moments. But I want to finish this cricket story, seeing that the FNB Tri Series just concluded in Windhoek, and I want to give you guys some insight into how much money is actually in the sport of cricket. Right? Remember when I said that Cricket Namibia, if I'm wrong, anyone can call in and correct me, it's the only sport that sells broadcast rights. You know, I previously discussed on here several times how NFS decided to give their broadcast rights away for free. Why? I don't know. Seems that they'll still do that this year. But cricket, I know for a fact, sells their broadcast rights, not just to local media, but abroad. As we know, cricket is India's favorite sport. India, one of the most populated nations in the world. So just by numbers, it makes sense that you sell your broadcast rights to the Indian audiences. But let's head back to the SA T20 and what I wanted to bring up about this league and how much money they make, okay? Like I said, Graham Smith said they contributed $6.5 billion to South Africa's economy, 9,500 jobs. And I'm emphasizing on these numbers because you're going to hear similar numbers when we go through the manifesto implementation plan, when we go through NDP6, what they say about sport, right? But he said 9,500 jobs, a lot of that was about from vendors that were able to sell their products. But another key aspect to this league is the partnerships, right? And this includes a partnership with the Indian Premier League, the biggest cricket league in the world, one of the biggest sporting leagues in the world, not just cricket league, one of the biggest sporting leagues in the world. And their partnership there is requires for the IPL that six of its franchises buy into six teams participating into the SAT 20. So imagine if, to put it in football terms, if in the PSL you had six PSL teams buying into six Namibian teams that are participating in the equivalent of this SAT20, right? And it's actually the IPL, the Indian Premier League, is ranked the 11th richest global sporting league in the world. This was per 2024. So we're talking about big money here, right? During last year's auction, 23-year-old Dewald Brevis broke the SAT20 auction record when he was bought by the Pretoria Capitals for 16.5 million rand. And the previous record was 14 million. And so this is what can happen when leagues are properly organized, when people come together to decide that they're gonna produce something for their nation. You can contribute 6.5 billion rand to the economy. Now, it would have been great if Graham went into exactly how they came to this 6.5 billion rand number, but
The Money Show.
The Friday.
That would be a story for another day. Maybe perhaps at the end of the show, we can play a bit of the interview where he did say that. That is on the South African station 702, but that is if we have additional time. I want us to get to our topic. Before I get to our topic, let's go through some European footballing news. For those of you that may not have been tuned into your TVs, we'll start in the English Premier League. As I said, right now, you have Chelsea and Arsenal playing against each other. It is still halftime, 1-1 in that fixture. You had, to start the weekend, you had Liverpool beating Ipswich by 2-0. Alexander Isak double. Then you had Newcastle up against Bournemouth that finished 2-2. Brentford against Sunderland that finished 1-1. Brighton and Leeds that finished 1-1 as well. And then coming to more fixtures, we had Crystal Palace taking on Fulham. That finished 3-2 for Crystal Palace, and Manchester City going up against newly promoted Coventry, winning that 1-0 thanks to a goal from Erling Haaland. And then you had Forest and Tottenham Hotspur, as well as Hull and Aston Villa. Both of those matches ended in goalless draws. And then coming to the fixtures today, you had the Red Devils of Manchester taking on Everton, as the previous caller alluded to, that finished in a 2-2 draw. And right now we have Arsenal playing against Chelsea in a London derby that is currently at 1-1. Should anything change in that fixture, I will keep you up to date. In La Liga, we had Barcelona winning 5-0 thanks to a double from Lamine Yamal. Pedri got on the score sheet, Rafinha got on the score sheet, Fermin Lopez on the score sheet. And then, of course, for all my Madrid supporters, I have bad news to report there, because Real Madrid lost 1-0 to Real Betis on Friday evening. Okay, so let's move on to our topic of today, right? Which is the question that we're going to attempt to answer is, can we conference our way to sporting success? Now, what do I mean when I ask this question, when I say, can we conference our way to sporting success? You know, in Namibia and in the continent, not just Namibia, it seems that every other month, there's some kind of conference happening, whether it's in sport, whether it's outside of sport. There's always some kind of conference happening, some kind of panel discussion happening where, you know, they're meant to discuss various things. And we recently had one this weekend. This was coupled together with sports, the creative industry, and the tourism industry. And I attended one of the panel discussions. You know, I'm host of the Eagle Sports Zone. I like to bring you guys interesting news, interesting discussions that you won't get anywhere else. So I figured, let me attend one of these to see what's happening at these discussions. What's anything new that's being discussed at this particular panel discussion. And it was around 30, 45 minutes long, and I left feeling quite empty from this panel discussion, you know. I left with the feeling of jadedness, a feeling of repetition, a feeling of hearing things that I've heard before. Right? And remember on the Eagle Sports Zone how we always talk about how sport is a reflection of society. And what do we mean by that? We mean just what happens in sports is what happens in society. So if there's racism happening in sport, it's because there's racism in the society. Basically saying that things that happen in sport are not just isolated to the sport world. And our topic for today, I think, highlights this the best, because every other week, there's a conference of something, whether it's a mining conference, oil and gas conference, the human resource conference. There's always some kind of conference taking place. And Namibia has become quite the hotspot for said conferences. And ironically enough, at a different conference, I got to listen to a man by the name of JJ Tabani speak, right? And part of his speech, part of what he was talking about is how on the continent we love to talk, we love to launch things, we love to launch policies, we love to talk about things that we've talking about for days and days and decades and decades and decades. So I'm going to play you a bit of what motivated this show today. Is when I attended this particular event, which was a cybersecurity event, by the way, but what the speaker had to say fits perfectly to what we're going to discuss today and why I feel that we are starting to become a broken record, saying the same things over and over and over again when it comes to sport. Right? It's time to talk about results. It's time to talk about the things that we are actually implementing to garner the results that it is that we desire. You know, right now we're in a place where every time we meet, when it comes to sport, we're saying the same things over and over and over again. And this is not me saying that these conferences don't have their place, because they certainly do. But we'll talk about that on the other side of this.
Let's just talk about what we call a cautionary tale. I love the vision that's just been presented, and I really want to congratulate you for that, because you need a vision for things to happen. Let's just talk about the cautionary tale is that we love to launch things, number one. Number two, we lack a sense of urgency in the continent. That's part of why the inter-Africa trade doesn't work. We need to be honest also, and not fool ourselves. Right? Inter-Africa trade is 15%, maybe 16%, if you over-calculate. In Europe, it's 68%. That this is chalk and cheese, and we cannot mess around and not acknowledge that. Right? This is why GCI is so critical. Because we need to ask ourselves, why has inter-Africa trade failed? Right? Now, I was reading a lot of assessments about why it has failed. In fact, I'm speaking here in Namibia in October in a conference where I'll be talking about Africa integration. So when the invitation came to speak here about why it has failed, in fact, I'm speaking here in Namibia.
We'll continue on the other side of this.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less. And be on the lookout for the weekly competition question.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Good news for the Arsenal supporters. The score is now 2-1 in that fixture. Martin Odegaard with the goal in the 50th minute. Still early doors in the second half. Let's see if Chelsea can mount a comeback after the Gunners have now successfully come back, since Chelsea is the one that broke the deadlock. So, but as I was saying, the reason I played that clip from JJ Tabani, who said that intra-Africa trade is at 15%, despite all the various, African Union conferences, the various African Free Trade Continental Area conferences, SACU conferences, ECOWAS conferences, every month we are meeting to discuss the same thing over and over again. People like Kwame Nkrumah were discussing about African unity in 1960, whichever year that was, right? In fact, he said, if we don't unite, we will perish. He said that in the 60s, and almost 60 years later, we're still talking about the same thing. And I say all that to say that that's another example of sport reflecting society, right? So we go to all these events where we talk about, oh no, Namibia must professionalize sport, Namibia must commercialize sport, we need more infrastructure, so on and so on. Only to come back a month later and say the same thing again. And go back the next month to say the same thing again. Over and over and over again, right? And as I said, these conferences, they have their place. Because in the conference, there's bound to be someone who is hearing this information for the first time. Especially if it's someone young. For example, with this conference on the weekend, I saw a lot of school-going children attending. So for them, it was definitely the first time that they heard things like sports professionalization and things of that nature. And maybe it'll spark some ideas in their mind and will help the country get to those goals, right? And just so that I'm balanced in what I'm talking about today, like I said, I recognize the value that these conferences, these panel discussions have, not only in Namibia, but in the continent as well. You know, if I look at a country like Rwanda, Rwanda has built an entire economy around hosting said conferences. For example, they reported that last year from what they call MICE, which is Meetings, Incentives, Conferences, and Exhibitions, that sector generated almost $100 million for Rwanda, right? So every time you see a conference, just know that it's not happening out of the goodness of the hearts of whoever is hosting the conference. Someone somewhere is making a lot of money from these things. And maybe that's why these conferences always happen. It's because they're profitable. You know, despite if they might say their developmental angle that they might go with. And speaking of Rwanda, you know, there's another one happening, which is called the Africa Union Sports Council Sports Business Forum. It's happening this coming week in Kigali. And Namibia is sending a delegation, as they did last year. And I tried to look up some of the things that came out of the forum last year, but couldn't necessarily, you know, find any resolution or any stories really that came from it. But what I can tell you is that what's going to be discussed there this year, if whoever attended it last year and is attending it this year, there's a 99.99% chance we're going to be repeating what was discussed last year. This is my problem with these panels, right? Because you have, you know, they'll fly out people from all over the continent to tell us things that we've already discussed, things that we already discussed at the last conference, things that we already know. I mean, why do you need to fly out someone from another country to come and tell us about why sports professionalization is important? Who in the room doesn't know that? You don't need to fly in someone to tell us about the importance of online branding for athletes and things of that nature. Everyone in the room knows that. And in these rooms, you know, you'll have your federations. They'll talk about their issues. Everyone's going to talk about their funding issues. Then someone's going to talk about the importance of governance structures within federations. You know, like I said, you can predict what's happening in these conversations. But what would be better, what would be more productive, more fruitful, more engaging, is if in these discussions and conferences, because remember, there's members of the government, members of parliament, whether it's ministers, deputy ministers, and so on, that are invited to speak on these panel discussions. So, for example, you'll have a minister speaking at a panel discussion saying, asking a question like, why am I only seeing the banks supporting Namibian sports? Why am I not seeing your retailers? Why am I not seeing your mines? Why am I not seeing whatever company you want to say in the industry? They will be asking the questions. Meanwhile, this individual sits in a parliament or sits in a government, is part of an administration that told us some of these things are going to be implemented. But then you have them coming to a panel saying, asking the question, asking the audience, or telling the audience as if to say that they, you know, they're bringing up a new idea, telling the audience that so-and-so companies need to start supporting sport. When 2 years ago, or whenever the elections were, they are the ones that told us they're going to make some of these things a requirement, right? And so now we're going to go, we're going to deep dive again into the manifesto implementation plan. So you have a background on what it is that we were promised when it comes to sport. And so the next time you attend a conference, or next time you hear about a conference or read about a conference, and you hear that so-and-so individual asked or brought up a particular point, or so-and-so, you know, decision maker brought up something, next time you have the conference to say, but why are you asking us why certain things in sport aren't happening when you said you're going to do this, right? So let's go into the, let's start with the manifesto implementation plan, okay? That is the Swapo Party manifesto implementation plan. As we said, this plan has 7 focus areas, 7 priority areas, and they rank them from 1. They rank them from 1 to 7, and sport is ranked number 2. Agriculture is number 1. So sport ranks ahead of youth empowerment. It ranks ahead of the creative industry. It ranks ahead of land and housing. It ranks ahead of health, and it ranks ahead of education. The only thing that ranks above sport in this manifesto implementation plan of the Swapo Party is agriculture. Okay? So let me tell you what some of the things that were, I don't know if I can say the word is promised, but some of the things that were campaigned to the public when it comes to sport. So next time you hear someone talking about sport and our goals when it comes to sport, ask them about these things. And the good thing about this plan is it has timelines in it also, meaning that they said we want to achieve A, B, and C by A, B, and C date. So you'll hear that in just a moment. So the first one, the first objective that is in this manifesto implementation plan is, it says to develop essential sports infrastructure across Namibia, basic sports facilities in all constituencies, and CAF stadiums to support the growth and professionalization of sport. Okay, let me say that one more time. To develop essential sports infrastructure across Namibia, to have basic facilities in all constituencies and CAF stadiums to support the growth and professionalization of sports. That's an objective listed, the first objective listed in that, in this manifesto implementation plan. And in the section where it says, what does success look like? So the results that they expect under this objective, right, is they want stadiums that meet CAF category 2 and 3 to be completed, and they want basic infrastructure built in all 121 constituencies by 2028. Right? You know, 2026 is almost over. So they have about a year and change to make sure that this part is fulfilled. And the budget that they had for this, for the 121 basic infrastructures in all constituencies, is 242 million per annum for 4 years, totaling to 968 million for basic sports infrastructure. Now let's look at the timeline. This is the part that I really want to discuss, is the timeline. They said that by February 2025, they would have sent letters to governors for the identification of sites by regional councils and local authorities. By March 2025, all sites need to have been identified. By May 2025, standard designs completed, which okay, let me run through the rest. From May to July 2025, procurement needs to be completed. By September 2025, mass construction of sites commence. And by March 2026, for those that don't know, we are now in September 2026. Okay. In this plan, it says that by March 2026, 30 facilities should be completed. 30 out of the 121 promised facilities should be completed. So here's the first one that I want to tackle. You know, at these conferences, you'll attend one of these conferences and you'll have a minister, you'll have a deputy minister, or you'll have whoever in government speak on this panel and speak about Namibia needs to improve its sporting infrastructures. Something we've heard since I was in school. And I graduated from school 10 years ago. Okay, so fine. We have someone say this on a panel stage. Everyone claps their hands. And everyone goes home after. Those that weren't in attendance, then you hear about it on, whether it's on social media, whether it's on radio, whether it's in the newspaper the following day. And then it stops there. And then next month we have another conference. And then the same thing gets said again and again and again. Meanwhile, when it was voting time, they told us by March 2026, we'll have 30 of these facilities completed. What would be nice at these conferences is the people that, you know, that drafted this document, that are part of the administration that's being led and guided by this document. It would be nice if these individuals came to these panel discussions and said, we are now in September 2026. In 2024, we told you that by this time this year, we will have 30 facilities completed. We currently have zero of the facilities completed. As anyone can see, we have zero of these facilities completed. Here are the challenges that are preventing us from completing said facilities. Then, in my humble opinion, then we are having appropriate discussions about sports development, about infrastructure development. When we start to tackle, or when we start to dissect, and we start to analyze, and we start to ask questions about the things that were promised to us in regards to sport development. But now the problem comes when you attend these events, and those listening at home, I know you are not, you're not as privileged as I am to attend these events. That's why you have me to bring you this information. And what I can tell you is that when you attend these events and you ask some of these questions, when you ask the leaders to say, okay, but you know, we were told that by March 2026, we'll have so-and-so completed. Or when you say that, like, can we have more substantive conversations? It's like you are, they take it like, almost like you're insulting them, honestly. Then let me tell you, by 2026, the end of 2026, they said we would have 45 sites completed. 45 out of 121 facilities completed. So a third, right? By 2027, they said 30 sites, and then by 2028, so 2 years from now, we're supposed to have 121 basic sporting, what do they call it? Basic infrastructure in all 121 constituencies. Today is September the 6th, 2026. We're sitting at zero. So, you know, next panel discussion that happens, it would be nice if someone were to ask and get an answer. Because trust me, I've tried. It would be nice if someone were to ask and get an answer in terms of why have we not reached 30 facilities built. What's in the way? Can we talk about what's in the way of making this happen? Instead of just telling us the importance of making this happen and, you know, you benefiting from nice headlines the next day in the newspaper. Okay. But the next sort of results indicator that they have is now regarding the CAF stadiums. You know, the famous issue of the CAF stadiums. We're talking about Independence Stadium, we're talking about Sam Nyoma Stadium. The reason our Brave Warriors haven't played at home in, even I've lost count of the years, right? They said that they want to build CAF Category 2 stadiums in all 14 regions. So one, at minimum, CAF Category 2 stadiums in all 40, 14, excuse me, regions. They said that they would allocate $460 million per annum to Category 2 stadiums and $755 million Namibian dollars per annum for Category 3 stadiums. So let me give you the timeline of this one now. This is the one that's, in my opinion, is the one that we should really look at. They said that by June 2025, site selection and assessment will have been completed. I'm leaning on the side of no in terms of this, whether this has been done or not, because they would have told us if they did. Procurement completed and awarded by September 2025. I'm also leaning to no, because if that's the case, I would like someone to call in and tell me which site was identified in Erongo, which site was identified in Karas, which site was identified in Hadab, which site was identified in Zambezi, Kavango East, West, all the regions. Really, the only sites we know about is Windhoek, and that's because there's already a stadium there. So all other 13 regions, you know, if there's a regional councillor or someone from the ministry listening, call in and tell me what sites were identified, okay? Here's another one. They said that by March 2026, for those that don't know, we are in September 2026. So what does that make it? 6 months ago. 6 months ago, we were supposed to have three Category 2 stadiums, CAF Category 2 stadiums in Namibia. This is not information that I'm, it's not my opinion or things I'm making up. This is what is in the plan that was put in front of us when it was time to vote. Okay, and this is the document that's leading the administration that's currently in power. They told us that by March 2026, three CAF Category 2 stadiums would be completed. And by March 2027, how many months away from that are we now? I think around 6 months away from that, a little over that. 7 months away from that. Three stadiums, Category 2 stadiums. March 2028... it says that we were supposed to complete four Category 2 stadiums. And by March 2029, complete four Category 2 stadiums. And then by, this is now for Category 3, which is a bigger stadium. It said that by April 2026, they want to have begun the construction of five Category 3 stadiums. Again, April 2026, we are past then. That's 5 months ago. If anyone can call in and tell me if they've seen construction of these five stadiums, it will be much appreciated. March 2027 said they'll complete one stadium, Category 3 stadium. By March 2028, they'll complete one stadium. By March 2029, complete one stadium. And by March 2030, complete another stadium. They said that between the quarter one of 2026 and quarter four of 2029, there will be ongoing construction. And by the end of 2030, you know, the famous year of 2030, we were supposed to have completed all five Category 3 stadiums. So, again, I would like to bring forward that when we have these panel discussions, especially when people who have the power to implement these things, the people who said that they were going to implement these things, you know, we voted because we were told these things were going to be implemented. So when we have these panel discussions, it would be great instead of, you know, regurgitating the same things, instead of telling us about the importance of stadiums, instead of telling us about the importance of sporting infrastructure, you guys tell us what is the progress in terms of what was promised. You know, like I said, instead of flying, you know, South Africans or, let's not pick on South Africa, you can insert any country there. Instead of flying in a foreigner to talk to us about things that we already know, it would be nice if you said, okay, you know what? We flew in so-and-so foreigner. We met with the Namibian Football Association. We met with the Cricket Namibia. We met with the Namibia Rugby Union. We met with the Swimming Federation. We met with the Cycling Federation. And we created this program for athletes. Or, you know, for example, we just played a clip from 22 Hours. You know, we say, okay, we met with these federations. We're in contact with 22 Hours. And these are the campaigns we're going to create for athletes A, B, and C. And these are the targets we have. By the end of the year, we're going to grow their social media pages by X amount percent. And our goal is to have them sign X amount of brand deals. This is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to track it. That would be much better use, I think, of everyone's time and much better for our sporting development. But instead, no, we're going to meet again next month. Our leaders or our delegation is going to Kigali next week. And I can promise you, I'm going to come back with things that we've previously discussed. And I'll be here on the Eagle Sports Zone reporting on things that I've already reported on, you know, attributing quotes to people and statements that we've all already, you know, taken in. But I digress. The number in the studio is 083-288-401. The number is 083-288-401. And we have a question here from Ashipala, who said, good evening. I want to know what happened to the sports teams that we have been using at secondary schools, high school. Things such as, I want to know what happened to the sport items that we have been using at secondary school. Things such as javelins, shot put, discus, these items are made out of forever materials. They cannot be worn out. It's actually a good question. And he said he's referring to the 80s and 90s. So is your question, where did these things go? Is that your question? I mean, if they were used from the 80s and 90s, my brother, I think it's fair to say that, you know, they've been replaced. New ones have been implemented at the schools. I don't think anyone can still be using a javelin from 1980. Or perhaps things like shot puts can be reused, which I'm sure there may be at these certain schools. But that is a good question. You know, we'll put some feelers out there and we will get an answer for you. For those of you tuning in online, do continue to submit your questions. Send us your questions, your comments, your concerns. It is still 2-1 in the Chelsea-Arsenal fixture. Arsenal still leading by 2-1. So, I want to continue diving into the manifesto implementation plan. That was the one objective that we did. Now we're moving on to the second objective, which it says to establish sports centers of excellence within the Category 2 stadium. So this objective now hinges on objective number one being completed. And as we just discussed for the last few minutes, we're not close to achieving objective one. And I can remember talks about ground being broken in certain constituencies for these facilities, but as we've seen in our nation, in our society, the groundbreaking means nothing because there's hospitals whose ground was broken years ago, and until today, the only thing that's there is the ground still. So, you know, things like that, we shouldn't be too excited by until we see the fully built facility. That's when we can start getting excited. Now, moving on, I said this, they said they're going to establish sports centers of excellence within CAF Category 2 stadiums. And, what does success look like for this? The document says sports centers of excellence built and operational to promote career development, which is aimed at nurturing elite athletes from a young age, thereby enhancing the overall performance of Namibian sports on both national and international levels. Right? Youth Olympics is coming up in end of October, beginning of November of this year. So this would have been something that the athletes that we're sending over there could benefit from. And let me give you the timeline of this one. They said that for the timeline of year one, by June 2025, site identification and design finalization, concurrent with stadium design, right? And as we just said, on that front, we haven't achieved anything. By October 2025, they said they want to begin construction of the first three centers. Again, concurrent with the stadium construction. We can't build the centers if we don't build the stadiums. And unless anyone wants to prove me wrong, we haven't built the stadiums. By March 2026, continue construction and start recruitment of staff. I don't even need to comment on that one. By March 2028, complete all centers. So we know that objective is not going to happen. Until objective number one happens, objective number two cannot happen. And by the look of things, objective number one is not going to happen either. Objective number three, they said to provide sustainable financial support to sports leagues in order to prevent closure, enhance national performance, and promote grassroots development in Namibia. Now, this is the one that really got my grind, that really got my the gears in my brain turning, especially when I attended that conference, right? And I'm purposely not saying the name of the member of parliament who did it, because then I would be turning it into a personal thing, and it's not a personal thing, but it is an important issue that I wish we could openly discuss. Okay. Again, I'll highlight, when you attend these panel, when these discussions happen, when these conferences happen, I'm willing to say about 80% of people in attendance, right? Because it's, in general, it's your sports community that's attending. And who do I mean by your sports community? I mean your sports journalists. I mean athletes. I mean federation leaders or federation members. And then, you know, your members of government and sometimes decision makers at certain companies, you know, companies that are active in sports, whether it's your banking companies, whether it's your telecommunications companies. More often than not, they will also be there because they do have a presence in our sport, right? All these people that I just named from these entities, they would have heard everything that is going to be discussed at this panel, right? And like I said, as someone who's had the fortune, or maybe misfortune, depending on how you look at it, of attending these, I'm also now starting to almost predict what is being said at these things, right? It's a bunch of recycled, repetitive statements, and we don't really talk about the results, or we don't really talk about implementation, or we don't really talk about, you know, what was discussed before and how have we moved since then. It's always just the same thing. And like I said, sport is a reflection of society. If I take it outside of sport, you know, how many mining endowments, how many oil and gas conferences and things of this nature have taken place over the past, let's call it 4 or 5 years, you know? Not just in Namibia, I'm talking about on the continent also. You know, how many times have our presidents in Southern Africa met to discuss the importance of value addition? How many times? How many times have we here on Eagle FM had to report on, you know, whoever president, whoever minister said it's important for value addition to take place? But we almost never talk about the journey we've taken into achieving that. We never say, okay, last time we met, we discussed value addition, and today we're meeting, and these are the things we've done to try and get closer to that goal. That almost never happens. And I say almost on purpose, because I know there are some countries that are making strides towards that. But on a general scale, we'll meet again next year and discuss the same things. You know, we'll take beautiful pictures. We'll be at fancy gala dinners. And then next year will come, no change. Then the next election cycle will come, and we'll talk about the importance of sport to an economy. Then the excitement will wear off, and then we're back to square one again, right? Then I'm gonna be here on Eagle FM, going through the next manifesto implementation plan, going through the next NDP 7, and repeating what I was discussing in the previous NDP. But hey, at least we get to attend, you know, nice conferences, I suppose. But let's stick to this one, which of the objective of providing sustainable financial support to sports leagues. One of the key results in here, or the only key result in here actually, is financial support / sponsorship of sports leagues. And in this one, the initiatives that they listed here is to introduce a sports levy and ensure that 30% of gambling funds go to sport. So before I go to the other initiatives. So again, I want to pose the question. I want someone maybe to call in and help me understand, right? You have a conference or you have a panel discussion, you have an event, whichever, where a member of the 8th administration is there. Various key stakeholders are in the room. And someone predictably brings up the point of corporate needs to support Namibia, which is a true point. No one will deny that, right? Let's say someone brings up the point of corporate needs to support Namibia. Then the next person grabs the mic and says, you know, in Namibia, our coastline is, you know, full of fishing companies. Why don't I see you supporting Namibian sport? This is a member of the 8th administration now posing this question. Then they'll go on to say, certain retailers, why aren't you supporting sport? Then they'll go on to say, certain mining companies, why aren't you supporting sport? They'll pose the question, why am I only seeing a select group of companies supporting sport? Right? Which is, on the surface, it's a good question. It's a good question. It's not a question that's being asked for the first time by said individual. It's a question that's been asked by even people that call into the show on Eagle Sports Zone. So my point is that we are always meeting to ask the same questions or discuss the same points. When in reality, you know, when it was time to vote for said individual and said party, they told us, I'm reading it here, we'll introduce a sports levy and ensure that 30% of gambling funds go to sport. But the one I want to focus on is sports levy. So when a public servant asks or says that these companies need to support sport more, the retort to that question would be, or that statement would be, why? If I don't have a legal requirement to do so, why should I do so? Tell me why. I've been in Namibia maybe even since before independence. And since that time, I've never had the desire to, I've never had the requirement to support sport, and I've been just fine. So why now, because you're on a panel discussion asking why a particular company or particular industry is not supporting sport, how would that get said company to support sport? And my question is true, because if they didn't agree with me, they wouldn't have put this in their manifesto implementation plan. They realized that if they make it a requirement via sports levy or via a particular tax break, then more of the corporate will support sport. But now the question is, why hasn't this been implemented? That's the question. No, that would be an interesting sports conference to have. You know, maybe we should host the implementation sports conference or something like that. The where are we now sports conference, where we ask about national plans regarding sport. What's preventing them from being achieved? You know, because maybe there's stuff happening behind the scenes that me here on the Eagle Sports Zone doesn't know, or whoever listening in the public just doesn't know. But they don't tell us. So they leave us to speculate, and that's what we will continue to do. And in this one, they also said that they want to establish a formula that allocates resources based on league needs, performance metrics, and youth development initiatives. And youth development initiatives for sports leagues. Again, where is that formula? And then they said collaborate with sports federations to organize, to categorize leagues, international sports codes, priority sports codes, and development sports codes. This one, I believe they've kind of made progress towards. But again, this was something that was just announced. It's not something that I know has been implemented. And as JJ, Professor JJ said, you know, on the continent, we love to announce. It's nothing more that Africa loves than announcing things. Let me give you a timeline of this one now. For this one, they said that the funding formula will be established by June 2025. So over a year ago, we're supposed to have this funding formula that we don't have, today. And then by August 2025, they said that they will start with a fund allocation to leagues that would have been administered by August 2025. We're in a year later, September 2026. I know of no such thing. And then year one, this miraculous fund is supposed to support at least 5 youth development initiatives. That may or not have been achieved. I honestly don't know. Then on year two, evaluate and adjust the funding formula as necessary. So year two would have been now. So now they would have been evaluating and adjusting the funding formula as necessary. But as I said, we are now in year two. They can't evaluate and adjust the funding formula as necessary because the funding formula doesn't exist. It hasn't been implemented. It hasn't been established. Then in May 2025, they said they will launch a call for youth development initiatives from leagues. To the best of my knowledge, that hasn't happened either. By October 2025, review proposals and allocate funds. I also can't speak on that because I don't know if it's happened or not. If it did happen, I believe I would have reported on this. And then by December 2025, monitor implementation of youth. I'm not too sure what that one means, so I won't comment on that one. But those are the objectives that were listed in the Swapo Party Manifesto Implementation Plan, right? The document that's guiding, that's leading, that's supposed to be the light in regards to not just sports, but national development. So as you can see, majority of, probably close to 90% of what was told will happen in there, if not higher. Hasn't happened yet, you know. Let's be slightly optimistic, hasn't happened yet. They still have time, but they're very much so behind schedule. And it would be great if we could get updates on these things, you know. It would be very great. Then I want us to look at NDP6 when it comes to sport. But before we get to NDP6, it is still 2-1 in the Arsenal fixture. It is about to be full time. It is the 90. We are in the 93rd minute right now. 2-1 to the Gunners. Let's see if they can hold on. As we wait for them to hold on, we are going to take a very short musical break. We'll get into NDP6, and then I think we will still have time to hear from Graham Smith, in regard to what has the SAT20 done for the South African economy, and what can Namibia really learn from this? You know, like I said, I'll just catch you on the other side of this. We'll be back right after this.
are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Full time in the Arsenal-Chelsea fixture. The Gunners taking that 1-2. So that rounds up a game week 3 of the English Premier League, and the young table is as follows. You have Manchester City in first, played 3 matches, won all 3, on 9 points, leading the Gunners, who also played 3 matches and won 3 of those matches, also on 9 points. You have Hull City in third on 7 points, and then you have Chelsea in fourth on 6 points. Manchester United right now sitting in 11th, having won a game, having drawn a game, and having lost a game. Liverpool currently sit in 6th place on 5 points, following their victory over Ipswich on Friday. And yes, that is all the Premier League action that took place. So let's quickly dive into this NDP 6. What does NDP 6 say about sport? You know, I just talked about what the manifesto implementation plan says about sport, and NDP 6 has its own focus. NDP 6. Sport has its own focus area in NDP 6, right? And this focus area is titled Sports Development. And let me read you the opening paragraph, where they say that the government of Namibia recognizes sport as a powerful enabler of social transformation and sustainable development. Now, this sentence, while it is true, now this is an example of what you would hear at these conferences. You know, they like to repeat things like that, as if we don't, you know, already know this. They said that Namibia has 57 recognized sports codes. Sports offers significant benefits to communities and plays a critical role in promoting peace, fostering social and national cohesion, and economic and advancing socioeconomic development. Again, these are the phrases that they like to tell people at these conferences, at these panel discussions. You know, like it's groundbreaking information. So they say that they sub-goal that they have is professionalize and commercialize sport for sustainable socioeconomic development, peace, and social inclusion, which I just said. So they're saying that by 2030, the famous or maybe even infamous 2030, they want improved participation in sport with contribution to employment increase from the 1% of 2024 to 3.5% in 2023. So they want the total employment in Namibia, 3.5% of that should come from sport. You know, I just talked about one league in South Africa that created 9,500 jobs. So next panel discussion, now I want to hear from the government, I want to hear from the leaders. You know, instead of telling me about the benefits of sport, I want you to tell me, where are we in terms of this 3.5% number, from the 1% to the 3.5%? Where are we today? What's preventing us from moving to closer to the 3.5%? You know, let's have discussions like that. Let's actually have actual, you know, valuable discussions. And then they also say that the proportion of people that they want to participate in physical activity, from 29% to 34%. I think that number is actually, you know, increasing, because Namibians seem to be very interested in, you know, all these marathons and things of that nature that have been taking place, which is a good thing. It's a good thing to see from our society. So long may that continue. No complaints from me in that regard. Okay, then what they have in there is strategies and game changer. Improve multi-sports infrastructure at all levels. I think I discussed that greatly. Strengthen sport professionalization and commercialization. Now, this is another one that now it grinds my gears. Because it's something that they also love to say at these panel discussions, at these conferences. Right? They say, here in ADP 6, it says that the strategy focuses on developing a self-resilient sports sector that empowers communities, creates skills development, job opportunities, and careers in sport. Likewise, it will commercialize sport products, services, and support a sustainable funding model that reinforces sport development at all levels. Now, what I would love to hear at these elaborate panel discussions at these conferences, tell me how is this one going to be achieved? You know, like I said at the top of the show, you have a National Football Association that gives away its broadcast rights for free. You know, I asked the ministry, if you guys remember, I said, why is this happening? Why is this allowed to happen? Is this in line with what you guys said you want to do with sport? No, I asked. Then they told me something along the lines of, oh, Namibia's not ready for this. It's up to the Namibian Football Association to do so and so and so and so. So when you have the country's most popular sport and you're telling me we're not ready and you're telling me it's up to the federations to do it, if they are going to do it, then really what were we talking about in NDP6 when this was mentioned? If it's not happening in the biggest sport in the country or the most popular sport in the country, where exactly is it going to happen? Anyways, they move on to say another strategy and game changer, develop and operationalize an integrated sport data management system. This one also. You know, like I said, I'm Eagle Media House's in-house sports reporter, along with a couple other of my colleagues, right? And it was so long, I don't even remember when, but I believe it was at a point last year, sometime last year. Again, back to JJ's point, we love to launch things. We were invited to a launch of a, I guess you could call it a portal, like a sports data kind of portal. This portal was meant to house all federations, to have all the information, to have all their fixtures and events, basically all in one place. So if you wanted to know when is the next cricket match taking place, you go to this portal. If you wanted to know how many runs has Gerard Erasmus scored this year, you go to this portal. If you wanted to know how many matches has African Stars played this year, you go to this portal. If you wanted to know how many goals has Bwebwe scored this year, you're supposed to go to this portal. This portal was launched last year. If I have my timeline correct, but I know it was a long time ago. It was launched last year and was meant to be implemented later that year. It was launched in around March, I believe it was. Right? It was meant to be implemented, let's say June of last year. When September 2026, to this day, nothing. Right? But if you go and ask the stakeholders involved and say, yo, like, where's this thing that you made us come to, made us have all this elaborate press, where's this thing? If you ask that question, it's like you're villain number one, which is something I don't understand. But anyways, under this, they said that the strategy will ensure that there is sport research in the country that will provide reliable data. The strategy will create Namibia's sports development index. Another thing that we've heard about for years and years. You know, the beautiful thing about me being a sports reporter is I encounter other sports reporters from other media companies, right? And it just so happens that they're older than me. So sometimes when I come to them and I'm excited about, when I'm like, yo, did you guys hear about the data management system that was launched? Did you guys hear about the sports index? And they tell me, my good friend in Christ, or my good friend in Allah, or my good friend in Buddha, whoever you believe in. When I tell them, did you hear about the sports levy? I say, this is nothing new. These are things that we have also heard about in the past, from other administrations, from other ministries, from other ministers. So these are new things that are happening. So then it increases the frustration even more when you attend a conference and you hear these things being repeated. You know, if I speak on an individual level, I'm fairly, I guess you could say new to the industry. You know, I don't have the years under my belt that these other senior colleagues have that I'm mentioning. But even in my young time now, I'm starting to realize, hold on a second. I've heard this before. I know where this conversation is going. When are we actually going to talk about the implementation of these things, or what's stopping the implementation of these things? You know, that's my point of the show today, is let's start asking different questions. Let's start having different conversation points. Let's not, you know, on air, there's something called filling time, when you're just regurgitating things or saying things that you don't even believe in because you just want to fill time. This is what these gatherings are starting to feel like. Just filling time. And like I said, these gatherings do have their place. They do have their value. And pay attention to the word value. Because like I said, these conferences aren't happening for free. Someone somewhere is profiting off these conferences, and the rest of the public is left to read things that they've read before, hear things that they've heard before. Anyways, under this this strategy, they go on to say that the strategy will create Namibia's a sport development index that will coordinate the aspect of sport data collection and management through an integrated sport data management system and database. If anyone can call in and tell me if this database exists yet, please enlighten me. And then it goes on to say an integrated sports data management system aims to centralize, manage, and analyze various types of sports-related data to improve decision-making, enhance performance, and optimize operational efficiency. This includes creating a centralized repository for data from different sources, ensuring quality reliable data, enabling real-time access to information, and facilitating advanced analytics. Beautiful words. But 2 years later, remember this, NDP6 was released end of 2024, yes? We're almost at the end of 2026. None of what I've read so far from here do we have any notion of how far we are, or if we've even started the journey of achieving these things. We don't. And then they say, they have a flagship program in here titled Integrated Sports Development, which is the provision of sports facilities that are compliant with both national and international standards to increase access to sport for sport participation. To increase sports participation will be ensured, it says. The program aims to create an enabling environment for all Namibians to participate in the sport of their choice, at the same time providing talented Namibians the opportunity to excel in a sport that can be a career to secure their livelihoods. I mean, again, sounds great on paper, and it's something we've heard several times. Additionally, the program aims to establish a centralized sports data management system to support informed decision-making. Okay, this seems maybe there's a copy-paste from the other one. I'm not sure if that's a typing error or not, but that's what was read under the sports data management system. So there you have it. That's what was promised to us in regard to sport 2 years ago. And 2026, we're still having conferences discussing how nice these things would be, what they would mean for Namibia if they would be implemented. You know, it's a lot of ifs, a lot of woulds, a lot of wishful thinking and speaking is what happens. And you know, when this whole new sports journey, I'm putting in air quotes, new sports journey took place after the elections, on a personal level, I was very excited. And we wrote an article on this in The Villager that you can go and find on the Villager website. That's www.thevillager.com.na, titled Namibia is at an inflection point in sport. Yes, here it is. On the 7th of March, 2025, the Village newspaper wrote the following article with the following headline titled, Namibian Sport Approaching Inflection Point. And I'm the one that wrote that article. The reason I wrote that article is because, you know, I took the time at the time when these documents were released, I took the time to read them. I took the time to take in as much as I could about what people were saying regards to the future of Namibian sport. And as a fairly new person in the Namibian sport media at the time, and as a young person as well, I was excited. I had a positive outlook of what was going to happen. You know, I didn't have the jaded, tinted view that I have as I sit here today. And at the time, I was very excited because I said, this is incredible. If our government is telling us they're going to build a stadium in each region, they're going to build a basic sporting facility in each constituency, and they're telling us when they're going to do this by, they're giving us a timeline of when they're going to do this by, they're telling us they're going to implement things like sports levies, they're telling us they're going to build, what's the centers they call them in the basic facilities? No, these are great things that I saw on paper. I said, wow. Let me even give them a round of applause now. I said, wow. If this is where we're going, I'm excited. I'm jumping for joy as a sports enthusiast, as a sports fan, as a young member of the sports community. I saw that. I said, wow. But in that very same article that you can, again, go read on thevillager.com.na, just type in Namibian sport approaching inflection point. And I was fortunate enough to have several contributors to this article. And that's when the seed of don't be so excited got planted in my mind, because I reached out to senior members in the sports industry, and they said, because I asked them about, what do you think about, you know, what's being proposed to us? They said, My young friend, these aren't new suggestions. We're old enough to have experienced other administrations that promised us similar things that obviously today haven't come to fruition. So that's why I titled the article that would say we're at an inflection point. If these great ideas can't be implemented, then I don't know what's going to happen to our sporting industry, honestly. Because if we kind of succeed with this, with all these grand ideas, all these great ideas, and with all the information and technology available to us today, if we can't succeed with this, then really what exactly are we doing in our sporting industry? And again, I would like to give a balanced view of what's happening in the sports industry. Because, you know, I spent a lot of time now talking about what hasn't happened. But there is some positives happening in our sport. It's not all doom and gloom, but it's doom and gloom in the perspective of what we were told is going to happen. With that, I'll debate anyone on that. And I'll debate using these two documents that I was using. Nothing else. Just those two documents. Because believe, not only as a journalist, but as a citizen, I have the right to say, you promised me 3 stadiums by X amount of time. The time has passed. Where are the stadiums? No. And that's the problem is, here in the media, if we pose these questions, one, it is a goes unanswered, or two, you immediately sense or you immediately notice that they were not happy that you asked that question. But, you know, someone might have voted for you because you told them you were going to do this. And if it doesn't happen, what happens then? No, that's what we should be discussing at these conferences. Tell us what is happening in your, I don't know if they sit in boardrooms, in your offices. What is preventing you from achieving what you said you were going to achieve? Let's talk about that at these conferences. Ladies and gentlemen, do remember that The Villager will be published tomorrow. That is, bright and early, it will be sent directly to your mobile device or your email address. And if you haven't become a subscriber yet of The Villager, simply send us a WhatsApp message. Tell us that you want to become a subscriber. Follow our WhatsApp channel. Follow our social media pages. That's on Facebook. That's on Instagram, that's on X, that's on LinkedIn, the Villager newspaper on LinkedIn. We are Eagle Media House. So, Eagle FM, maybe, excuse me. On Instagram, the Villager Nam. On X, the Villager Nam. On Facebook, the Villager Namibia. So you'll be able to access the latest edition of the Villager. And if you want it sent directly to your email address, simply send us a WhatsApp message that is on 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. Make sure you save the number as a contact as well. You'll be able to access the Villager newspaper. So now, to close off, I want us to listen to the full interview with Graham Smith, where he was talking on 702. That is a radio station over in South Africa, telling us about the impact of the South African League, you know, telling us about, here's an example now of a league, of an association, of a group of people that aren't just talking about how nice sport could be for their country. Here's someone telling you what the sport actually did for the country. All right. So please, conference hosters, conference attendees, next time you host a conference, let's talk about things on the ground, things as they're actually happening. Let's not talk about how nice things would be if they occurred. Let's talk about what's on the ground. What are we working towards? Okay? Thanks for tuning in to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. I will leave you in the hands of Graham Smith, speaking on the on a show called The Money Show on 702 FM.
The file.
The Friday.
We're marching towards the hour 7 here on The Money Show. And around this time on the show, we usually do lifestyle and trends. And we're about to get into something very interesting that's happening here on our shores in South Africa. Season 4 of the Betway SA20 was one to remember, with 22 of 34 matches completely sold out, which I absolutely understand, because the atmosphere at those games really, really feels festive. SA20, an exciting cricket league that attracts the world stars, has established itself into a commercial sporting success and is tonight's Friday file. Joining us to tell us more about it is South African cricket legend and SA20 League Commissioner Graham Smith. Graham, welcome again to The Money Show.
Oh, Glenn, thank you for having me. It's always good to catch up.
Those kind of numbers, I mean, we saw attendance at the SA20 Season 4 increase by 13%, 22 matches sold out of 34. Any league in the world, and I mean any sporting code, will definitely love those numbers. How were you able to attract fans to the stadium?
Yeah, look, I mean, when I'm listening to you mention the numbers, I'm thinking back to pre-season one, where, you know, one of our goals was to try and like revive a cricket fan and bring new fans to the game. So, you know, a lot of the things that we were talking about and thinking about in terms of not only having the best cricketers in the world on show, but you know, the fan experience was crucial. The entertainment aspect, the music, the lifestyle of our stadiums was crucial to how we went about it. So, you know, it's been terrific to see that unfold over the last 4 years. I mean, I think last year in stadium, the amount of people I met that were coming to cricket for the first time just really made me happy. I mean, we want to see, you know, the game and the sport grow in this country and introduce it to a whole lot of new people. So, it was brilliant. And for us now moving into season 5, our fifth birthday is around the corner, and, hopefully a lot more to come.
One of the toughest things to do in the South African economy is to get bums on seats, especially when we're talking sports, because it's a matter of spending your money or whatever is left of it after you handle your business every month. So what kind of things are happening at the stadiums that have people come there and enjoy themselves? It really feels festive. I mean, when I went there in Cape Town in January, I was with my family, and it felt like everyone's needs was catered for.
Yeah, look, we try and provide a stadium experience that everyone, from families right through to those that want to have, you know, a great day out and a lot of fun, can have. There's, you know, everything we do is very fan-centric. The decisions we make around the entertainment, the stadium experience, even to our sponsors, you know, when we're building in our sponsorship contracts, it's always a fan activation, like a car giveaway or the Catch 2 Million, or, you know, every element is around trying to make sure that our fans have the best experience. Obviously, the core product will always be, you know, highly competitive cricket, the best cricketers. But around that, how can you create an experience that fans will have the best time? And those that are new to the game, you know, fall in love with the game. So you know, every decision we make is around that. And I think also, you know, pricing of tickets is crucial.
Yeah.
It's a very unique event. You know, it's not like if you take the rugby that's on now, it's a Saturday and a Saturday. We've got a game a day for almost 5-6 weeks, which is, you know, in itself a unique challenge to be able to attract fans to. So, you know, seeing fans come out on a Monday and a Tuesday night with their families to support the event is something I'll never take for granted.
The SA League growth has now been independently assessed. Can you share some of those numbers in terms of perhaps revenue and the economic impact of having such an event in South Africa?
Yeah, and I think we've obviously got an audit firm that's done that for us year on year. So I think this year we brought $6.5 billion to the GDP. I think created over 9,500 jobs. And I think, you know, what I'm always trying to get through to people is the scale of the event that we've been able to build. You know, I think it's almost like bringing a version of a world event to South Africa every year. And for me, that's the exciting thing. You know, I keep referencing my time in stadium. You know, there's even, you know, there was a guy selling donuts in the PE Gebergte Stadium, and, you know, he spoke about how there hadn't been, you know, cricket event in many years that he could, you know, sell his products. And I think for me, those are the stories that you'd love to tell. You know, everyone looks at the highlights and the main things, but, you know, the 9,500 jobs, building the communities and seeing the fan bases get behind their teams is terrific.
When you first launched this particular sporting product, you were keen to say you want commercial success, but you also want to make sure that, you know, sports is seen differently in South Africa in form of entertainment. And one thing that also happens there, besides the cricket, of course, is the entertainment. Is that something you'll be doing this time around in terms of partnering with those headliners that make sure that people are entertained?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think, you know, obviously you need the commercial success that allows you to be able to build things in stadium. You know, you, without the revenue of our main supporters, you know, broadcasters and our big sponsors, you know, it doesn't allow you to create these experiences. So we're very grateful for that. But then, you know, we as you say, the money that we spend on making sure that in-stadium experience is world-class, the music, the entertainment, absolutely will be the same. Hopefully will be slightly better and bigger this year. And I think also one of the things is what we've seen from our fans and the feedback we get is that people love the consistency of the product as well. Year on year, they know what to expect. They know that the kids are going to have a great time. They know that the adults are going to have a jewel, and that the cricket's highly competitive. So, you know, if we can keep meeting those standards, then hopefully the fans will keep supporting us.
Without giving us any numbers about your war chest for season 5 of this competition, but you've attracted people like Mitchell Marsh, Sam Curran, Jason Holder, international stars, Kane Williamson, right? And for cricket fans, the avid ones, we want to look forward to things like the auctions and who's going to play for who this time around. Have you kept those IPL partnerships?
Yeah, look, I think we're very fortunate with our six teams, the six IPL franchises that bought into to SA20, that they're highly competitive. They want to win. The quality of cricketer that they bring out and produce has been amazing and looks good for this season. I think we obviously had a big auction last year. We work in 3-year cycles. That will be a smaller auction this year. I think there's 19 slots in this year's auction available, and they're big slots. But the squads are looking very strong and very competitive again. Very, very excited for the auction. I think it's the 7th of October. And then the squads are all together. I think over the transition of the 3 to 4 seasons now, what we've seen is the South African player as well has gone from strength to strength. You know, there's some quality South African players around, and that's making the league more and more competitive on an annual basis.
Another thing that's happened, as you touch on the players, is we've found gems in very, very young players that are coming through the system. They're playing in packed stadiums, preparing them for their Protea future. So something of a platform also for SA young stars.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we force our franchises to pick, 223 players, and you're starting to see the benefits of that in the system. You know, you think about the likes of Mapaka, Lwandle Pretorius. I mean, it's crazy to think that Devil Brevis is, you know, still only 23 as an example. But, you know, under 19 tiers looking strong, and then that talent starts coming through into our system. you know, the difference is when I played for South Africa, you know, people globally only saw sort of the 14 or 15 players that were part of the national team all the time. But now you've got an event that's being viewed around the world at scale, and you've got 60, 70 South African players across the board, you know, showing their talents. And you're starting to see it, how they're being picked up in franchise leagues around the world. I mean, I think last year we were the most represented nation internationally at the IPL. So that's great things in 4 years that you start to see those little trends starting to happen that hopefully keeps South African cricket and the Proteas strong.
From a brand perspective, the SA20 has also punched above its weight, if you will, because when you talk about T20 cricket, you now talk about the IPL, SA20 amongst the Big Bash, as well as the PSL and CPL in Caribbean cricket.
Yeah, I think we've seen the transition now that franchise cricket is growing, and my feeling is that you probably end up with 4 to 5 tier one leagues, you know, the high profile leagues around the world. And it's very important to us that SA20 is recognized, certainly in the Southern Hemisphere, as the number one kind of product. I think we globally our numbers are speaking out, like just outside India is the best in the world. But, you know, we need to make sure that every year we don't take it for granted, and we keep looking to be successful. Our fans hopefully keep supporting us. The great cricketers keep turning up. And that your product is valued, you know. So we work hard every year. We've also, you know, in terms of talent pipeline, we're investing heavily back into a schools program now. We're going into our third year. Last year we had 600 schools, girls and boys, countrywide. So, you know, the grassroots program that we're supporting Cricket South Africa on as well is hugely important for the talent pipeline.
And I think the most important questions for fans this time around, Graham, are they still in contention for around millions if they catch in the stands?
Yeah, we're obviously working with Betway and our other partners, but there'll be all the same stuff. We're very fortunate that our sponsors and partners have bought into our, the way that we're fan-centric. So there's always a giveaway, you know, the catch 2 million, Suzuki are giving away a car, Absa, you know, their spin and win, you know, giveaway money to fans in stadium. It's so just to name a few, it's been unbelievable how partners like Rain and so on, you know, with their new devices. So the support we get from our partners in terms of helping lift the product up and to make it what it is crucial.
Looking forward to the summer then, Graham Smith, the Betway SA20 League Commissioner.